Welcome, everyone, to the Elevator Pitch, an ATS Breathe Easy podcast. My name is Divya Shankar. I'm a pulmonary and critical care research fellow at Boston University. On this podcast, I talk to the scientists behind innovative new studies to get their elevator pitch, the big picture story behind their research. And importantly, we explore how these studies can change the way we care for patients in the ICU. Today, we are restarting the elevator pitch after a bit of a hiatus since Dr. Siva Bhavani was running the show. For our first episode, we are very excited to have with us Dr. John Donnelly from the University of Michigan's Department of Learning Health Sciences to discuss his recent work that was published in Annals ATS, Impact of Reducing Time to Antibiotics on Sepsis Mortality, Antibiotic Use, and Adverse Events. It's great to have you here, Dr. Donnelly. Could you start off with introducing yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. Hi, Dr. Shankar. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm currently an assistant professor at the University of Michigan, like you mentioned, but I also have roles at the Veterans Affairs Ann Arbor Healthcare System, both as an investigator as well as an implementation scientist. So background is in epidemiology. I'm an epidemiologist by training, but have been involved in health services research for a number of years, broadly focused on improving care for patients with life-threatening infection. But my work has shifted a little bit more recently to focus on what's called implementation science. This is the idea of finding approaches to increase uptake of evidence-based practices. And so this work kind of spans both the VA and non-VA. I did want to highlight that this particular study is part of an Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality funded project led by my mentor, Dr. Haley Prescott and Dr. Vincent Liu. And really just a quick disclaimer that views expressed are my own and do not represent the VA, Department of Veterans Affairs, or the U.S. government.
Great. Thank you so much. And since you mentioned this current study, let's get right into it. Can you give us your elevator pitch for the study you and your team recently published?
Yes, and I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. Let's see how I do. So treatment of sepsis requires the use of antimicrobial agents. And prior research has shown that more rapid treatment is associated with reduced mortality. This has resulted in kind of a worldwide focus on trying to reduce the time to antibiotics and sepsis, so reducing the time from detection to receipt of antibiotics. And then quality improvements across the country have also strongly promoted this idea and made this kind of a priority goal. However, kind of on the ground in clinical care, it can be often difficult to detect sepsis in real time with kind of high accuracy. And so it's possible that patients who would not benefit from antibiotics might receive them kind of just due to this push to get patients with sepsis antibiotics as quickly as possible. And so that really is an important guideline to try to have patients with sepsis receive antibiotics as quick as they can, but it's kind of important to study these different trade-offs. And so those have not necessarily been studied rigorously and have definitely not been quantified directly. So that's kind of what we try to do in this analysis. It is worth noting that this work is a natural extension of a prior study in which we found that hospitals and two systems really did a pretty good job of kind of balancing these two goals of getting antibiotics quickly to patients with sepsis, but not having a lot of what we term spillover prescribing, so increasing prescribing in these other populations. In other words, they were able to do both things pretty well. However, it kind of came up, you know, during writing of that paper, as well as reviews and kind of discussing it, that might not be representative across all hospital settings, that might be completely different situations in terms of prescribing. So what we want to do here was look at kind of the best and worst case scenarios, in particular, looking at when things might not be going so well. So we did that by analyzing data from over 1.5 million suspected infection hospitalizations over 2013 to 2018 from the same two healthcare systems. But here we wanted to look at directly the benefits and harms. So benefits in terms of sepsis mortality, as well as these antibiotic-associated harms. And specifically kind of linking to this idea of reducing antibiotic times by 50%. So just a few quick findings from the study. What we found was that antibiotic-associated adverse events that were plausibly attributed to antibiotics were quite common. So roughly 13% of the patients in the cohort that we identified. And then that the number of newly treated patients due to faster time to antibiotics did vary quite widely depending on what the setting was. And so this extended from one per sepsis death averted, so kind of one new patient treated, to over 180 in the worst case. So just wide variability there. And then lastly, even in the worst case scenario, which was low sepsis prevalence, so hospital with not a lot of sepsis and extremely high spillover, the number of new adverse events were still quite small. So this was 7 events per sepsis death. So kind of the take home there is that benefits of shortening time to antibiotics and sepsis generally outweigh the harms. Although I would like to note that antibiotic stewardship is definitely important and we need to ensure stewardship and reduce unnecessary use when possible, especially to prevent harms related to antimicrobial resistance, which is something we did not look at here.
Yeah, that's really great. You know, I think all of us who work in the ICU can really relate to that kind of push and pull between getting antibiotics to really sick patients and wanting to be mindful about stewardship. So I think that really kind of hit me when reading your study. And what I thought was really interesting was your methodology of using simulation to generate this knowledge. And so I was hoping you could tell us a little more about using simulation methodology to generate knowledge about behaviors in healthcare and kind of when you think about doing a simulation study and how you go about it.
Absolutely. So here, really the idea for statistical simulation came from this issue that we wanted to examine the sensitivity of our estimates in kind of settings that we weren't able to directly observe. And so that was really the driving force behind why we had to look at statistical simulation. And here, our prior findings and estimates really served as kind of a starting point that we wanted to see if we kind of changed a few things, what that would look like. And specifically, the two things that we changed were kind of looking at high versus low sepsis prevalence, as well as high versus low spillover prescribing. So we needed to simulate hospitals with these characteristics and did so by making just a few kind of specific assumptions. And I wanted to highlight in particular, this was specifying how many untreated patients that there may be in a given hospital, as well as what percentage of those patients would be newly treated kind of as a result of kind of what we change in terms of antibiotic times. And so I do want to, in terms of these types of studies, I think it's important to have a clear goal in mind in terms of what you're trying to estimate and why you're choosing this approach. And in this case, we were very interested in these trade-offs and trying to directly estimate those quantitatively and understand what happened in fairly extreme scenarios that we did, you know, we didn't really have a good sense of what was happening in the real world.
Got you. And kind of in the bigger picture, how do you think data like this can translate into healthcare system improvement through implementation methods? As you mentioned, your other focus is on implementation science.
Yes, that's a great question. And this is definitely something of interest to myself and kind of interest to the field overall, I think. So in terms of implementation science, really the focus there is on uptake of what we term evidence-based practices. And so it can be helpful to kind of think through in any given research question, what exactly the practice or practices might be. And so for this study, the way I tend to think about it is there's kind of two distinct practices that might be in a little bit of tension. So one is to deliver antibiotics to patients with life-threatening infection as rapidly as possible. And the second is to reduce unnecessary antibiotic use for patients that do not have infectious causes of illness. And so if we wanted to develop an implementation strategy, which is kind of the how-to of implementation science, to achieve these goals, it'd be important to make sure that we're not kind of focusing too much on one of these things. And so not going too much into delivering antibiotics quickly without, you know, considering antibiotic stewardship as well. I think how our study fits into this is that it kind of gets at this idea that they might not be as directly conflicting as possible or kind of as one would think, in that it does seem possible to emphasize reducing antibiotic times for critically ill sepsis patients without causing too much or really any harm from what we saw here due to unnecessary use. And so in that way, I kind of think of our study as the first step towards thinking about interventions. So thinking about improving practice and also suggesting that it'd be very important to account for the local context when you're doing that. So kind of something that you're doing in one hospital might not necessarily work in a different hospital that has a totally different kind of prescribing culture, different patient population, kind of all those things.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to my next question is you talk a lot in your paper about how the data came from hospitals that have strong stewardship programs. So how do you think if you had data from kind of weaker stewardship hospitals that your results might have differed or you think they'd be similar?
Absolutely. And so as I mentioned, that was actually one of the main reasons we kind of went to this kind of statistical simulation approach here. And that was to better understand what the real kind of worst case scenario might be. And just to give a little bit more context there. So in a prior study, we observed that for every hour reduction in median time to antibiotics for sepsis patients, 0.2% of untreated patients would be newly treated. And so in the current study, we examined values kind of starting from that point. So it's kind of 0.2% what we observed, all the way up to 10%, which is really a very, very kind of stark difference in prescribing practice. And so in reality, it might be somewhat unlikely that that level of spillover would be seen somewhere, but we want to just kind of specify without the highest feasible or kind of plausible amount of spillover could be. So in that sense, I think we kind of covered pretty good ground there of kind of giving this case scenario. I do think that the kind of strength of stewardship idea is definitely something worth thinking about going forward in terms of how we define that, how we think about what good antibiotic stewardship looks like.
Yeah. And on that note, I think stewardship can also kind of differ depending on the time of day and the day of the week. I think staffing on the weekends is different for a lot of hospitals. Staffing at night is different. Did you guys kind of think about that in your study and whether there would be any differences in spillover prescribing at times when stewardship is not as available?
So that's a great question. We didn't necessarily explore the impact of kind of time of admission or kind of time of day on antibiotic prescribing. I do think that would be a kind of a great way to unpack this idea of understanding the role of antibiotic stewardship and kind of thinking about how you might even think about a natural experiment of some kind to do that. And I do think it kind of suggests a need to develop interventions that are really meant to support clinicians and kind of really clinician-driven. And I think that's really kind of a major benefit of using some of these implementation science frameworks is it kind of helps you get at that in a very kind of clear way. And I would say that kind of one approach to the problem overall, or kind of trying to strike this balance, might be that trying to target patients and populations where there's kind of high confidence that antibiotics wouldn't be needed. And so I think that kind of help in these situations when stewardship isn't necessarily available is kind of taking this approach where we kind of think through what's the likelihood of bacterial infection, kind of how sick is the patient. And I think in terms of moving the needle, making improvement, I think there's kind of an important aspect of it that's related to defining what the population we're focusing on is. And so in that sense, I think trying to identify these strategies to promote judicious antibiotic use in those populations is probably the way to go.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. In some patients, it's very clear, and then in others, it's much less clear. And finding those patients could really improve practice. It was great hearing all of this. Are there any other take-home messages you want our listeners to take from your work? Any future directions you see this going in?
Yes. So I think the main take-home message would be that while antibiotic-associated adverse events are common and efforts should be made to focus on improving antibiotic stewardship overall, kind of as a means of preventing these, I think that this analysis provides some evidence that reducing time to antibiotics for sepsis patients does not necessarily result in substantial harms in these other populations. And then kind of like we talked about a little bit, future work should focus on some theory-informed intervention development that helps to support clinicians, and specifically thinking about maybe some key decision points throughout the course of patient care. So thinking through kind of initial antibiotic decisions, kind of this decisions around de-escalation, kind of decisions around what happens at discharge, kind of trying to have a cohesive idea and kind of trying to think through interventions that might be best suited to a few of those different places. And just the last plug for implementation science, I think this provides some really useful frameworks for this. And kind of that's how we're going to be thinking about this going forward.
That's really great. Thank you so much, Dr. Donnelly, for sharing your insights on our inaugural revival of the Elevator Pitch. And thank you to all our listeners for listening to the Elevator Pitch podcast. And we hope you'll join us next time for the big picture on the latest critical care studies.